I'm going to work in Woolworths.
When I grow up, I want to be an astronaut.
When I get married, I'd like to have two children.
My heart's desire is to see my daddy.
I don't want to answer that.
Those were some of the seven-year-old subjects of the Up series back in 1964. That's Michael Apted's critically acclaimed documentary series that follows the lives of children in England. The series was inspired by the Jesuit saying, "Give me the child until he is seven, and I will give you the man." Now those seven-year-old children are middle-aged, and every 7 years, the filmmaker checks in on their lives. Now Harvard researchers have done something similar. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer, and today on Radio Boston, we'll be talking about a new study that involves 12,000 people who were tracked from kindergarten until high school to see how the kindergarten experience affected their educational performance. Those 12,000 people are now in their late 20s. So a group of Harvard researchers decided to look at how they're doing now and what impact, if any, those kindergarten years have had on their adult lives. John Friedman is one of those researchers. He's an assistant professor of public policy at Harvard's Kennedy School, and he's in the studio now. Welcome to Radio Boston, John.
Thanks for having me.
John, the idea of what some people call human longevity studies or personal longevity studies, where you follow a group of individuals over a long time, is really appealing to researchers. And this one is particularly interesting because it gives us the sense that your early childhood years can have a really, really profound impact on the rest of your life. So before we get to your actual findings, why did you want to look at this?
We just thought that this was an incredibly important question and one which we really knew very little about. It's so difficult to find a large group of students and track them over this many years. And even more so, it's hard to find real experimental evidence to apply. So it just seemed like an important question. We had the tools to attack it.
So these were kindergartners in Tennessee. They were randomly selected and put in some classes that were large, some that were small, some with experienced teachers, some with not so experienced teachers. Over the years, different researchers checked in with them until they got to high school. You and your fellow researchers swooped in now that they're in their late 20s. So the earlier researchers took a look at their test scores over time. Now that they're in their late 20s, there are no test scores to look at. So what were you looking at?
That's right. So we tried to look at adult outcomes that we think are actually more important than test scores. We don't really care if a student is scoring higher on the test. What we care about is whether they're going to college, whether they have a good job, whether they're living in a good neighborhood. And so we looked at these variables. We saw, did these students attend college? What are they earning these days? What types of neighborhoods are they living in? Are they married? And what we found was that one's kindergarten experience has an incredibly powerful effect on these variables even 25 years later.
You also looked at things like, are you married? Do you own a home? What's your income? And things like this might be called signs of stability, but I don't know that people would necessarily say that equals either success or happiness. So I'm wondering if you think looking at whether you're married, whether you own a home, whether you earn a lot of money is really the right judge of whether kindergarten served you well.
So I don't think it's the full picture. In fact, that's why we tried to look beyond just how much you're earning, because we felt that we could present a more nuanced picture of the lives these children were leading. But we don't have data on everything and every aspect of their lives. And so especially for this population, which is a slightly disadvantaged population in Tennessee, we thought that something like owning a home or having a 401k so that you were saving for retirement, you know, it's not the be-all and the end-all, but they were signs that they had entered a reasonably stable job or that they had the type of money to buy a house, so that these would be things to which these students would aspire.
What types of kindergarten students ended up doing the best when they were adults?
So that was one of the remarkable findings, was that the quality of one's kindergarten class seemed to have a really positive impact across a whole broad range of students, whether they were rich or poor, whether they were black or white, whether they were high achieving or low achieving. It looked like having a good classroom affected everyone.
What makes a good classroom?
So we have a couple of different answers to this. We found some evidence that the size of one's classroom matters. So having a small class looks like it has positive impacts. Having a more experienced teacher also looks like it has a positive impact. But there's so much about a kindergarten classroom that we can't measure directly. And so another way we went about it was to look at the test scores at the end of the year. And Essentially, we're asking, do increases in kindergarten test scores, as generated by this type of random experiment, are they good predictors of long-run outcomes? And the answer is that they are, which is, I find, pretty remarkable given the distance in between and what types of questions children are able to answer at the end of kindergarten.
Listeners, we're talking about a new Harvard study that looks at how kindergarten can actually have an impact on your adult life, whether you get married, whether you own a house, whether you make a good income. We want to know if you think that your kindergarten experience prepared you well, or if you think your life would have been different if you had a different teacher or a smaller classroom. We also want to know if you think we should be paying even more attention to kids in kindergarten, or if that just might encourage the helicopter parent phenomenon. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. John Friedman, I want to add another voice, and this is Janice Satlak-Mott. She has taught kindergarten in the Arlington Public School System for more than 30 years. She's currently at Stratton Elementary School, which just this month was actually named a Blue Ribbon School by the U.S. Department of Education for its high level of achievement. And Janice, I believe you're going to Washington, D.C. in November to receive that award for your school.
That's right. That's right.
So, Janice, you've been sitting here listening to John Friedman talk about his study, and obviously, having taught for decades, you should have a pretty good perspective on this. Were you surprised by these findings, that what you might be doing in a kindergarten classroom could affect your students' lives and incomes 30, 40 years from now?
Absolutely not. I've always felt that the quality of that early kindergarten program is certainly setting the stage for the rest of a child's school career. I do see myself helping children construct a base of knowledge in the social area, the emotional, the attitudinal, and in the cognitive areas. And the way to do that is to give children lots of opportunities to hear good literature, to learn to problem solve, and most importantly, have an opportunity to create within that small kindergarten setting a community, a collaborating community where we're respecting each other, we're acting as another type of family.
So it's not just that in kindergarten we learn basic phonics and basic reading, but you're teaching them basic socialization, all these skills that will help them become good adults when they're older.
That's absolutely right. And for my whole basis for teaching any type of skill, whether it's a social skill or a cognitive skill, is for children to have an opportunity to make connections to their own lives personally and then to the larger world. And that's where the construct comes in. I'm giving them those kinds of opportunities and experiences, whether it's through books, through play, through units of study where they're looking at nature, again, in the larger world. So certainly, this is really the place where children are very receptive, very responsive, very optimistic, and very flexible as thinkers and as learners.
John Friedman, you came at this from a research public policy perspective, but I wonder if you could tell me why you think the experience of kindergarten has such long-lasting effects to the point that it could influence your income when you're approaching your 30s.
So what we found really interesting was that the impacts on kindergarten tests did not persist. So this actually created a question in the mind of the research community. Well, you know, if the test scores don't continue to be higher after having a good kindergarten class, maybe it doesn't have that long ranging of an impact. And what we found was that it wasn't the test scores per se, but a lot of what we call non-cognitive skills, things that Janice was mentioning, maybe the ability to cooperate in a group, to share with one's peers, to exist without getting on other people's nerves, that really might matter in the long run. So you can see why that might not increase your eighth grade test score, but that'll make you a lot more successful. And I think the research exactly bears out what Janice's experience is.
So you're saying a good, positive, strong year in kindergarten doesn't necessarily mean you'll be a high academic performer throughout your student years, but that you might be a very stable and successful adult, even if it wasn't all about great grades.
Precisely.
I want to bring a listener in, and this is Ginny from Roslindale. Hi, Ginny. What do you make of this finding in this study?
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. I was mostly impressed and certainly agree with the notion that if we educate children in smaller groups, especially in kindergarten and the primary grades, then we should anticipate that they will be more successful. I think that one of the arguments that most school systems have looked at over the years is class size. And I have always thought, and as a teacher, I've thought it's a no-brainer.
You're a teacher? Ginny, you're a teacher?
Yes, I'm actually a high school teacher. But I think we see the results in high school when children have been educated in smaller groups. I mean, it makes sense if you teach children all of those basics when they are 4 and 5 and 6 years old in small groups. They get it. They get the attention. They get the socialization. They get cognitive skills.
Ginny, thank you for
that. My high school, with my high school kids, I make a joke and I say, listen, everything you need to know in life you learned in kindergarten. Take your turn, share your toys, say please and thank you. And they are building blocks for success for kids to do well in school.
Ginny, thank you for that. Janice Satlak-Mott, so Ginny is talking about, in particular, she thinks small class sizes make a big difference.
Right.
Describe to us in your experience, what is then the ideal classroom size? What's the ideal classroom teacher? What should parents be looking for?
Well, if I had a wish, it would probably be a class that hovered around between 16 and 18 children. With that size, we have lots of opportunities to group and regroup children. They are going to also have opportunities to share ideas. We certainly want children to be able to, you know, to listen to other people's ideas, peers as well. When class sizes start to get larger, it becomes necessary to put more structure, so there's less choice that the children have for making their own decisions. One of the major developmental milestones for children is to become independent, to become competent, feel that they can do things on their own independently, with obviously, you know, support as needed. But when you have a larger group, it becomes more about structuring things so that children are who might get led astray and need, you know, a lot of redirecting. The more bodies you have in the room, the more likely you're going to have to do that.
And John Friedman of Harvard's Kennedy School, you did the study with your colleagues. You looked specifically at class sizes and teacher experience. So what did you find was the ideal class size and the ideal amount of experience that a teacher should have?
So we found, we looked at two different class sizes. One set of classes was around 22 or 23 students. Another size was about 15 or 16 students. And we found that those in smaller classes did do better. Those with more experienced teachers also did better. That was more just a, you know, the more experience, the better you did. Of course, that might not be experience per se. It might be that older teachers are better. It could be that teachers who have been around for a long time are there exactly because they're good at what they do and they love what they do.
Should we be surprised by that?
I think it's not surprising that it's not a finding that shocks you. What's interesting is that we can really put a number on it, and we can, instead of just speculating that experience is good, we can really precisely pick out the impact.
In fact, you actually come up with a dollar figure of, if you look at one of the groups of kindergartners who had a smaller class and a more experienced teacher, you say that collectively they make several hundred thousand dollars more than their peers who had a less experienced teacher and a larger class size.
We were just looking at, you can do this either for class size or for teacher experience, but for instance, having a more experienced teacher generates about $1,000 extra a year. So if you add that up over these students' lives and you figure that they're on average about 20 students in a class, you can get to like $300,000 per year for the value of a more experienced teacher. And you get similar numbers for smaller classes.
Janice, do you buy this?
I absolutely do. I think not that young teachers don't certainly bring something to the mix when they come into the classroom, but I think if you're passionate about what you do and you remain in that job, it's because you're curious and you're constantly adding to your repertoire of your own personal practice. And you have, I think, more flexibility in terms of looking at a situation and shifting if you need to. It almost becomes an intuitive feeling that you have about a lesson and how it's going. And, it doesn't feel like it's going in the right direction. I need to shift this way.
Let's go to another guest. This is William from Beacon Hill. And, William, you raised the issue of sort of the Montessori approach, for example.
Yeah, thanks for having me on the program. Great conversation. I'd like to hear the guest perspective on structured versus a more integral approach. In other words, you know, there's so many developers nowadays, and at a time when, as Americans, we compete with, you know, other people trained elsewhere, and, you know, people who may have a technical ability that exceeds the ones we have locally. I wondered what the guest's perspective is on, yeah, kind of a more structured math and science approach versus a more flowery integral approach.
Janice, you're the educator in the room. Do you want to take that?
I actually feel that there needs to be a certain amount of formal structure when you are presenting any type of academic cognitive thinking skill. There certainly is the necessity for children to have an opportunity to experiment and to be flexible and to be creative. But without that formal structure, there are going to be tough things that children don't get to learn because they're not choosing to do those hard things,
so
human nature.
So structure is important for kids at a young age.
Absolutely.
We have another caller, Josh from Hopedale, who raises a socioeconomic issue. Hi, Josh.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
Yeah, my question is really for the researcher who conducted the study, and I'm wondering if the impact of a really good kindergarten teacher in a really good kindergarten classroom is greater on kids who come from underprivileged homes, or if it's the same on kids who come from privileged homes and underprivileged homes.
John Friedman, you want to take that?
Well, thanks. It's a great question and an important one. Our study found that both students from more disadvantaged backgrounds and students from richer homes benefited roughly equally from smaller classes, more experienced teachers, and overall class quality. So it looks like these types of interactions, these types of interventions, are not limited to one particular set of students. I think an important policy point is, unfortunately, some disadvantaged students end up in schools where there are many fewer resources. And so we want to, one important implication of our findings, I think, is that the local basis of school funding has the potential to really propagate inequality if those students from more disadvantaged backgrounds also have schools with fewer resources.
Because many schools in poor communities are funded by property taxes and the taxes may be lower. You're talking about that connection?
Yeah. Well, I mean, even if the tax rate isn't lower, there's just less money to fund the schools.
And this socioeconomic issue is important because, Janice, as you probably know, many teachers feel that there are outside factors in their students' lives, what happens at home, that you can only do so much to change as an educator. And actually, John, you also acknowledge in your research that a parent's role is actually probably three times as important, I think you say, as the kindergarten class may be. Is that what your research says?
Yeah, I mean, this is a very speculative figure. This is not something on which we have a great amount of data, but the fact that a kindergarten class is very important does not mean that a child's experiences outside the classroom or their background doesn't matter. Looks like that stuff matters a tremendous amount. Yeah, our guess maybe three times more, but it's very, very important.
And Janice, maybe you can speak to this. I think that the larger issue also is how much resources do communities put into teachers and particularly kindergarten teachers, which isn't always the highest paid job. Do you feel like the message here is we have to remember to invest even at that kindergarten level, maybe more than we are today?
I absolutely do feel that we need to invest more. Certainly, my experience with parents has been they, no matter what type of socioeconomic background they come from, what their child is doing in school is very important. I work hard to create a partnership with parents. But there was a point in time, I'm going to go back maybe 15, 20 years, where early intervention was really important. And now because of, fiscal issues, that has gone away and there seems to be less of an import there. In fact, it's easy, I think, for us to just maintain status quo as far as, what we're putting in financially to schools when actually we really need to be investing more.
Janice Satlak-Mott, thank you very much for talking about this. And John Friedman of Harvard's Kennedy School, thanks to you too. We've been talking about a new Harvard study that shows how kindergarten can impact people's lives all the way through adulthood in terms of homeownership and marriage. Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.